Rapiophile. Noun. One who is attracted to intelligence. Join us, fellow fun-loving lover of knowledge, as we dig into your favorite topics with our very own nerdy diatribes, words of wisdom, and takes on life as millennials. Welcome to the Sapiophiles.
Hello, listeners. This is Kayla.
And this is Chelsea. Hello.
Welcome back.
Hey, it's almost a year. Probably the next episode is like the 1 year mark.
Will it be?
Probably. Actually,
probably, yeah, because it'll be right around my birthday.
Happy
the world
early
will
birthday.
Know my birthday.
Happy very early birthday.
Thank you. So, Chelsea.
Yes.
You know this, but our listeners may not. I recently attended an incredible conference in Toronto, Canada called NAGAP. And it is a conference that's dedicated to supporting and teaching best practices and basically getting GEM professionals. So GEM stands for Graduate Enrollment Management Professionals, to strive to be the best that they can be in order to serve the student populations that we serve. So it was incredible. And one of the best parts of the conference, in my opinion, was the keynote talk, which was, we have three keynote speakers. This was the last one on Saturday morning. And it was given by an author and podcaster and motivational speaker called Ty Bennett.
Cool.
And Ty Bennett, if you want to follow him on Twitter, is at Ty, T-Y, Bennett, B-E-N-N-E-T-T. He's the author of the books, The Power of Influence, The Power of Storytelling, and Partnership is the New Leadership. And he is also the podcaster on the Relevant Leadership Podcast, which you can download as well. And I would highly recommend it.
Awesome.
And one of the reasons that I liked his talk so much was because it made leadership not about the leader, but about the people that he or she is leading. So,
hello. Bingley wants to lead this conversation.
He can. Although Bingley, one of the best things about being a leader is being a listener. But
he's not doing that. He's just talking.
In any case, Ty Bennett talked about how great leaders are oftentimes, or all the time, great influencers. Mm-hmm. And how if you want to influence others, the key is to form relationships and to listen. And I have two quotes written down that I have because I ended up tweeting them live when he was giving his presentation. And they really resonated with me. And I figured it would be a good way to start our conversation about leadership. So the first one is, one of the most powerful feelings in the world is being heard, mm-hmm. which I think is important.
Yes.
And his second one was, follow the platinum rule. Treat other people the way they want to be treated. So I know a lot of us know the golden rule, which is treat others the way you want to be treated. But he kind of segued into the love languages and how not all of us want to be loved the same way.
Right.
And I know that
he mentioned the love languages?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's so interesting.
If you truly want to lead a group of individuals, then you should treat other people the way they want to be treated.
Yeah.
And I thought that was so cool.
And as individuals, they don't all want to be treated the same way.
Right.
So getting to know and build relationships with everybody that you are leading is really important. Awesome.
So I loved his stuff. I would highly recommend his podcast. If you're a boss and you want to hire a motivational speaker, he's amazing. I could have listened to him talk an entire day. And I'm
always
going
to professional development that'll make people interested, not bored.
Oh, he's a phenomenal speaker and so funny and just really, really down to earth. And you can tell that he just leads by example and leads by influencing, not by being completely authoritative.
Awesome. Yeah. So leadership is really important. And it's something that I feel like we've both kind of stepped into more of those roles recently in the past few years.
Yes.
Definitely with our careers and also just how we've been in life. I mean, I've certainly stepped into more of that kind of role with my career where I, you know, work with teachers and supervise and kind of help them build their curriculum and everything. And you do that in your work as well, not supervising teachers, but you do have kind of a supervisory component to your job as well.
I do. And I also, through NAGAP, I also just got their Future Leader Award.
Yay.
This year, so, for my work in publications for them. So I'm really, really excited. So even if I'm not quite 100% a leader yet, I'm at least a future emerging leader.
Well, here's the thing. Everybody is an emerging leader because you're never totally finished becoming what you are. And that's, I heard a TED Talk about this recently, and I forget the name of the TED Talk, but it was something about like the end of time illusion, that people have this opinion that they've just recently stepped into like who they're going to be for real. And it always constantly changes. So you're never actually at the end. You're at whatever point you are. But when we think about the last 10 years and the next 10 years, people always predict that they will change less in the next 10 years than they have in the last 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So if you say something like, how much would you pay to see your favorite band from 10 years ago now? And how much would you pay to see your favorite band now in 10 years? People always think that they will like their favorite band now in 10 years as much, and that's not true. So things like that. So you have this opinion that you've just become who you're always going to be. And we're always growing and changing. We're not ever who we're always going to be. We put more pieces together. We become a more solid, comfortable version of ourselves. But that version is always going to grow and change. So I think we are all emerging leaders. We're all learning to lead, even though we might be young and still figuring it out.
I think that one thing I got out of a lot of different sessions from this conference and then the one I just attended before that, Forum on Education Abroad, is kind of piggybacking off of what you just said, Chelsea, is that leadership can take many forms. It doesn't have to be a position. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be, you could be someone in your office who is a copywriter. And say you're with a group of other copywriters, you could be the light leader of that group simply based on how you listen and interact with other people. So, you know, someone in a group of high schoolers might be the leader in that group, even if they're all on the same playing field. So there's not necessarily a role that needs to be met within an office space or a career in order to be a leader. You could be a leader in other aspects of your life as well.
Yeah, leader of your friends or of your family.
Or even in a group with a specific niche. So like one of my goals is to always be a leader in advocating for education. Mm-hmm. And that's through what I do for work, from what I do with From Houses to Homes Guatemala and all of that. So it can span beyond your career in what your leadership goals are.
Absolutely. So I think that that's really important to kind of take a look at where you can lead in your life and trust that you can be a leader. Even though a lot of times, sometimes you might have that imposter syndrome and feel like you can't, which is a big part of it. But we all kind of have the ability to lead if we just make sure we focus on it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, all right. So leaders, I did some research on what are the characteristics of a leader. And I've also done like some classes in it in my master's degree in order to get the supervisor education certification. So done a bunch of classes and did some research. And there are a lot of different models of leadership. There's lots of different kinds of strong leaders that have their own leadership style. Some are more authoritarian styles. Some are more diplomatic styles. Some are more like laissez-faire styles. Some are more collaborative. There's a lot of different types of styles. So we both kind of took a look at what our styles were. We took a quiz, and there are many, many different types of styles, but why don't we talk about what our styles are and how that helps us make a strong leadership decisions.
Okay.
All right. So my leadership style came up as the democratic style. So as a leader, that means I like to include thoughts and opinions of everybody who I am leading. So it's less of the authoritarian, like this is what you're doing and do it because they told you to. And it's more of here's the big picture. Why don't you tell me what you know? And let's see how we can use your knowledge to help put this together and to try to like take each person for their own intellect and own creativity and then sort of make a judgment call putting all of it together. But kind of like the Democratic style, having everybody weigh in. It's also really important in the Democratic style, which is similar to what you'll hear Kayla's style is in a minute. Very important to make it a comfortable environment for everybody and make it so that there's positive interactions between people. That's a really important part of the style too. So I definitely think that's true. When I work with people at work that I'm trying to, you know, give advice, give leadership advice to, I will definitely talk to them about like what their strengths are and how they see it. And that's the starting point where we go from always. And then the same leading anywhere else in life, I try to make sure I'm including everyone else's thoughts and opinions as much as possible. So that's kind of, it's not, I wouldn't call it like a hands-off style, but it's a giving trust and faith in the people who you're leading kind of style.
Cool. I like that.
Yeah.
I like that a lot. So my leadership style, which I find humorous in a very, very fitting way, because before Chelsea had suggested taking this quiz right before we started recording, I wrote down two things with stars in my notebook, and one says leadership equals about relationships, mm-hmm. and the other one says not all about talking, about listening.
Yes.
And so the first line of mine is diplomats prize interpersonal harmony.
Yes. And so you are the diplomat so style, fitting. Right?
I am the diplomat style. And just as I mentioned and kind of took note of even before I took the quiz, the diplomat style is leading based on relationships via social interactions, deep personal bonds. Diplomats are known for their ability to resolve conflicts in a peaceful way. And actually, the quiz actually says that we can often avoid them in the first place. So being able to look at what your employees or those that you're leading are doing, at, like, you know, reading social cues, reading their tone of voice. Are they performing differently than they normally would perform? And in reaching out to them individually or in a group based on what you're seeing, you're able to then avoid a conflict. What else does this say? So diplomats put less emphasis on challenging their employees than they do on putting their people in positions to succeed. So because a diplomat is passionate about creating relationships, the diplomat would then, rather than say, okay, we're going to put you in this situation where you're going to take a look at your weaknesses and we're really going to build up those weaknesses, they're now strengths. Instead, a diplomat would look at people's strengths and passions and then utilize them in roles that would make them natural leaders in those roles. I thought that was pretty cool.
I really like that piece of it. And I think that we have a lot of crossover in our styles.
We do.
It's just like, are you focused on their ideas or on the relationship? But you need both of them for either one to work. So it's very similar. And that makes sense to me, knowing what I know about you. But there are many other, leadership styles as well. So if you're not a leader the way we are a leader, you could still be a good leader. Some of the other styles that were in this quiz that are also in a lot of the research you can do on different leadership styles. So this might be a hybrid of research I've done and possible quiz answers. But some of the other ones are authoritarian, which is not always seen as the best style, but if you do it appropriately, it could be effective. So an authoritarian leader leads by power. They command power, they command respect, and because of that, they can pretty much dictate exactly what they would like to happen. And so authoritarian is very like, listen to me, follow my rules, I'm the boss. It's very opposite of what my style was, democratic, where what are your ideas? I would like to hear yours and let's collaborate. So it is very opposite. Depending on the person you're supervising, might work well, might not. They might be someone who likes structure and wants to know what to do. There's oftentimes confusion between authoritarian and authoritative. So I think we should talk about the difference between those as well.
Okay.
So authoritarian was from the point of view of let's be strong and powerful and command respect and listen to me. Authoritative is less about you, the leader, and more about the structure. So authoritative is like, these are the guidelines.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do these guidelines. But it's from a point of view of not listen to me because I'm the boss. Listen to this because it's the answer.
Okay.
So it's more from that point of view. And that can sometimes be a little more flexible than authoritarian because it's not so much this is what I say. It's here's the structure of what we need to do and how does it fit into these boxes. So sometimes okay. There can still be flexibility in that. So those are the two on the other end of the spectrum where it's very leader first and the spectrum goes all the way down to where it's very the people that you are supervisees first.
Mm-hmm.
So those two are on that end of the spectrum with authoritarian being the furthest. Then there are transactional leaders.
Okay.
Who basically they lead by motivation in terms of you do this, you get this. So that might be increasing pay. That might be increasing some other time off or whatever it is. But they use some kind of motivational tool to get people to do what they want. So it's still focused on their vision of it, but it's a transactional exchange. And that might work well for some people. But for some people, that is difficult for them as well.
Mm-hmm.
Then further down from the transactional model is the transformational model, which the transformational model is basically that the leader has this vision of where they want it to go, and they put people in jobs to try to make it go to this vision as well as possible. It's still focused from their vision, and mm-hmm. they're using their supervisees in specific roles in order to do it. So it's focused on the transformation. So that's one more step down. Then we start to get into the ones that are more employee first.
Okay. So
after that one, we have the maternal, which mm-hmm. is very focused on taking care of the needs of the employees, which also goes along with the kind of like the diplomat one that's like the next one. And these are kind mm-hmm. of, they're really two sides. So it's not a complete spectrum. These kind of like all can be shuffled.
Mm-hmm.
But the diplomat and the maternal are similar, but the maternal one is more focused on let me just take care of needs and putting the work second. The diplomat one is about the creating relationships and leveraging strengths.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the democratic one, which is what I was, which is focused on the ideas of the individuals that you are leading. And so that is kind of a leader second sort of role. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily leader second. Like, you would still have the overall final say in things, but the democratic model is very focused on, like, I want to hear from you because I respect your opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, the laissez-faire model, which is pretty much hands-off, I trust you, do what you want. So it's kind of a spectrum of those. And some of them, you could argue which way they go on the spectrum. They're really close. Like, I would say maybe diplomat before maternal.
Okay.
Perhaps. But they're all kind of similar. So I would say the ones that are leader first are authoritarian, authoritative, transactional, and transformational. And they have diplomat, democratic, maternal, and laissez-faire as lead-e first, supervisee. I don't know if mm-hmm. lead-e is a word. I keep saying that, but I don't know that that's really a thing.
I think I've...
The lead.
Probably heard.
Leader.
Follower.
The follower. Leader, the follower. Thank you.
But, so that's interesting.
So those are some of the models that people study.
So can I do what I do best
yeah.
and play devil's advocate?
Totally.
So I was taking notes. I'm not sure if you saw me like vigorously taking notes.
Of course.
And I wrote down, isn't the best leader the person able to put aside their personal leadership style in order to lead individuals based on their style?
Excellent.
I agree
with that.
So maybe that's the diplomat side of things, but in my opinion, and I know this was stressed in all the leadership seminars I went to this week, I can't lead anybody unless there are people. So if there are no people,
yeah,
then there's no leader. So
exactly.
They should be the focus, because if they're not there, then I'm just a single individual.
So it's kind of like having, well, people who are not in education, I'll explain what this is, but it's kind of like having an IEP for each person, an individualized education plan, what they need based on their needs and how you can help them because of their individual personality.
And it doesn't have to be like a huge thing, but say I wanted to ask all my friends to write a blog about something they're passionate about. I wouldn't ask all of you to write about sports.
Of course not.
You know, I'd ask Kristen to write about skiing.
Okay.
I'd ask you to write something about, you know, mental health, psychology, things that you're passionate about, or education or writing.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'd ask my friend Joanna to write about movies and influential movies over the years. My friend Evie, I'd probably ask to write about music and how it inspires her and how it inspires spirituality and psychology and everything. So I wouldn't ever be like, all of you write about sports for me.
Yeah.
Just, you know, it's just.
So it's what that person is passionate about and understands.
That sounds rather diplomatic, doesn't it?
It does sound diplomatic.
But, I mean, I'd like to think that if I had an employee who was more of an authoritarian,
mm-hmm.
I'd want to give them a job to do based on how they wanted to be led.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't necessarily, I don't want to use the word coddle, but I get to know that person enough through a relationship in order to know that that person needed structure. And there might be someone else in the office who doesn't need as much structure and has those creative juices. And then you'd let them do that on their own.
And I think this kind of goes to like the love languages too, in a sense of when we were talking about love languages. And if you haven't heard that episode, we'll like briefly recap in a second. But the love languages where you have the way that you need to be loved and the way that you are most proficient at loving. And I think it kind of goes along with that, how you like to be led and how you best lead. So the love language is really quick overview. It's a theory that there's 5 different love language styles, things that people need in order to feel appreciated and loved in their interpersonal relationships. Could be a romantic relationship, friendship, family, colleague relationship, depending on what it is. But in order for that person to feel loved, what they need. So the 5 styles of that were quality time, which I definitely am.
Mm-hmm.
Your words of affirmation, which you are.
Yes.
Touch.
And then I have another one.
Touch. That's not your other one.
Nope.
Then there's gifts. And then there's acts of service.
There it is.
Which is your other one. Yeah, mine... My main one is quality time. Probably touch is my second. I'm a lot more huggy. But you're definitely words of affirmation and then acts of service, which is interesting that we have different ones entirely. But we also had different ways that we're more proficient at giving as well. So like we're both competent in giving in the ways that we like to receive. But I also feel like I'm not really a gifts person. Like, giving me gifts is not necessarily going to translate to, I feel like this person loves me because they give me things. But I like picking out things specifically for other people. And I like giving gifts a lot more than I like getting gifts. So, you know, it's like that kind of, how do you like to lead? How do you like to be led? It kind of goes along with that. So that was a really quick synopsis of the love languages. Check it out. It was one of our early episodes. I think maybe 6 or 7, something like that.
It was very early on, but it was a good one.
So, yeah, you can check that out. It was, like, last spring. But, yeah, the love languages are something that – also, if you don't know your love language, cool thing to find out. Might help you with your your friendships, relationships, family situations. Mm-hmm. Cool thing to find out. But anyway, so I agree with that, that people have leadership styles that are important for that, that help them feel like a strong leader, but leadership styles that help the people that they're supervising might fall into a different way.
Mm-hmm. So I thought that was interesting. And I just kept on thinking about that the entire time when I was hearing all the different types.
Yeah.
Because to me, if you're a leader, you should be not in your ethics or your morals, but how you treat other people and treat them how they want to be treated and be a chameleon.
Yeah.
Like, you should be able to be adaptable and resilient.
Absolutely.
And
different situations might call for different styles. Like, for example, right. If there's an emergency situation, something really big just came up, you might be a democratic leader, but you might not have time to confer with everyone. So there are times when you might have to step into an authoritarian role and make a judgment call. On the other hand, there could be, if you're somebody who is more of an authoritarian leader by nature and you like to make things be the way that they are in your head, if there's a situation that doesn't necessarily affect you as the leader but is going to directly affect those that you are supervising, mm-hmm. that might be a situation where you have to say, okay, my judgment call isn't going to make the best outcome for our team here, so this is mm-hmm. one that I have to defer to my team. Also, if mm-hmm. I know that somebody has a particular strength that perhaps I don't, I think that's one of the big things of being a leader, knowing who knows things that you don't. And I think that's super interesting and important, because as much as we like to continue to learn and grow, we do not know everything, and nobody knows everything. You could have like 10 doctoral degrees. You don't know everything. Somebody knows something that's not your realm of what you're smart in, or not non-smart, but knowledgeable in. And finding those people makes the overall team better. Knowing people who whose strengths are your weaknesses is really important.
And to go beyond that, not just knowing that you're a lifelong learner and that there's so much that you don't know, but voicing that to those that you're leading is important too. So that, because I feel like everybody who is a good communicator or a good collaborator or a good leader, everybody in that group knows innately that they don't know everything. Mm-hmm. But actually being able to voice that and say, you know what, you're better at this than I am. I'd like to defer to you on this. That takes a whole different level of strength than just
absolutely
keeping it in.
And that also goes back to that developing rapport and building relationships, because mm-hmm. a lot of times, and I've found this when I've had leaders with this style, and also when I've had to lead people, there is, especially if you have like newer employees or like younger employees, there can be this fear of, I can't do anything wrong. It's the boss. They know everything. Humanizing yourself and making yourself just another person that they can relate to really helps relax people. And in relaxing them, helps them let their strengths shine. Because mm-hmm. I've had situations in the past where, particularly when I was younger, where I had a leader who was very authoritarian in a way that did not work for me at all. It didn't work for my students. It didn't work for me. And because of this, this made me so uncomfortable. And I got to a point where, like, you're right, I'm not doing this right. Mm-hmm. I'm screwing up the things that I know how to do already because you're freaking me out.
Mm-hmm.
So that can happen too. That was an example of a bad supervisor that I had at a previous job.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and we definitely have all had those supervisors that they make it difficult to even do tasks that you're very good at naturally.
Yeah. And it's interesting, if I think back, the things that I was not doing well at in that job are the things that like people come to me for advice on now, which is really funny. But I'm like, mm-hmm. oh, right. I am good at that. You just made me do it in a way that didn't make any sense for me and stressed me out and made me forget that I was good at it. So, yeah.
Exactly. And I think that to your point, humanizing yourself, the first thing I do in my job when I work with my student ambassadors, mm-hmm. who, for those of you who, actually, I don't think I've mentioned this at all. So for all of you listening, I work with student ambassadors in my work, my job, in order to get student testimonials and blogs and everything so students can talk about their experience, and in doing so, they teach one another. So it's much better than me going blah, 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 mm-hmm. study abroad, blah, 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 yay, yay, yay. Like, it's more about them telling each other why it's important, why it's special, why it is a learning experience, and why it's difficult even. So when I introduce myself to them, a lot of them will email me initially and say, Miss Provost, and I say, thank you so much for being so polite, but please call me Kayla, mm-hmm. because that, and it's how I open my emails to make sure that they know that they're talking to someone that is
a person,
and who respects their opinion just as much as they respect mine.
Yeah. I think that is really important. And it's always just about what's the most effective situation for who your team is.
Mm-hmm. So kind of segueing into something a little bit more lighthearted.
Okay.
So at the Forum on Education Abroad conference, which took place at the end of March, I went to a session called A Punny Thing Happened, mm-hmm. on the Way to the, and it was, you know, ellipses. Uh-huh. But it's a, you know, play on words because a funny thing happened on the way to the Forum. Yes. And that's the
which is a musical. If you haven't seen, mm-hmm. go see.
And
if you're in New Jersey, one of my favorite theater groups that I've worked with is doing it. I'm not in it, but they're doing it. If you guys know Interact in South Orange, they're doing it first week of May. Go see it.
Awesome.
Shout out to you guys.
Definitely. So one of the things that I think that theater people and actors do especially well is they allow the skills that they learned in improv to shine in their leadership. And this whole session was about using the 5 principles of improv.
Ooh, yay.
In order to be a better listener and a leader.
I'm excited because I like to act as well. So I'm excited about this. Okay, go for it.
So these are my colleagues, Sira Hamidi and Rich Kurtzman from University of Colorado Denver and Barcelona Study Abroad Experience, respectively, did an exercise with all of us. They went over the 5 principles of improv and exercise instructions, and we all did improv exercises.
I love improv.
And it was so helpful, especially with getting over that imposter syndrome that we all feel sometimes.
Because mm-hmm. no one has the answer.
Because no one has the answer. And they happened to, these presenters shared they kind of came up with clever titles for all of them. So the first one they have is Yes
And. Yes And, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Which is saying yes to an offer given by someone in improv requires a willing suspension of one's own agenda and going with what is being given.
So
this doesn't mean that every time someone gives you a suggestion that you have to say yes. But instead of shutting someone down, you just say, okay, I hear you. Please tell me a little bit more to see if this is something that we're interested in doing, or if this is something we can do.
Right. When you're doing it as an acting game, because mm-hmm. you have no set, this is where we are, this is what we're doing, anything somebody suggests, like, oh, this is a crazy boat we're on, right? You don't say, no, we're not on a boat. You have to say yes and then build on that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the yes and. Any suggestion that your scene partner puts into the scene, you can't discount. You have to go with anything your scene partner gives you in
yes.
improv. Now, like you were saying, in life, you don't have to go with everything people give you, but the ability to acknowledge it is important, I think. Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm just adding in improv things. Sorry.
No, that's great. This is perfect. Collaboration.
Yeah, because that's just when you do the acting game. Yeah.
Yes. The second one is active listening. Mm-hmm. So one thing that they spoke about is that when people are in conversations, oftentimes we're so consumed with what we're going to say next that we don't actually listen to what the other person's saying.
So true.
So active listening is all about concentrating on the person in front of you and taking in everything that they have to say in order to best act or comprehend.
This is one of my favorite things about acting, because once you have it memorized, your lines are never going to change. So mm-hmm. one of my favorite things about when I kind of get into the zone of acting is that you can actually watch and listen to your scene pattern, because your stuff's not going to change. But when you do listen, sometimes it does without you realizing it. So if I have a scene partner who one day says something really angrily and they haven't before, well, that'll change my delivery on my lines. But since I already knew my lines, I didn't have to think about that. I just had to react. So a lot of acting is reacting. And I think that's that's the connection.
Yes. Perfect. The third
acting
one.
Acting class connections.
Yay. It is. It's great. The third one, they call the ensemble teamwork relationship. Mm. And from a leadership perspective and from an acting perspective, it's setting others up for success.
Yes.
And knowing that your ensemble, so in this case, your the people that you're leading, they're made up of people with multiple personalities, with all different learning styles, with all different love languages, however you want to say it. And it takes all of you to do the performance.
Right. So improv games that go with this are, well, this is, Zip Zap Zop is kind of a reaction one. So that's when you have to stay on the right syllable and you go as fast as you can and react on each other. So that's kind of like active listening, but that's also, you have to work together because if one person messes it up, the whole thing has to start over. Other things like this are like Sound Machine or anything that builds upon what the person in front of that came before you did that needs everybody. There's the counting one where you have to work as a group and you just kind of listen to each other and you have to slowly count up to whatever the number it is. But if somebody counts at the same time as somebody else, you start over. So you have to, as a group, like really zone into each other. So those are some improv activities if you guys want to try all these acting games.
We also did one that was really cool where you just pretended that you had something in your hand.
Yeah.
And you had to look across and I'd say, Chelsea, I have a red ball. But I couldn't fake throw it until you said, yes, a red ball.
Mm-hmm.
And then eventually everybody had different things they were throwing. Like someone had a yellow Frisbee. Someone had a Coca-Cola bottle.
See them all.
You know, yeah. And you had to pay attention to saying someone's name and then making sure that they responded to you before you threw whatever it was to them.
Yeah. So it's just the collaboration and the making sure everyone is listening and understanding. And there are a lot of improv games that do that. I love acting class. It's been so long since I've done acting class, but this is so exciting.
See, and this helps, and it's all leadership skills.
Yeah.
Love
theater. The fourth one, we should all do theater.
The fourth one is called stage picture and knowing your goals. So it's all about remembering that there is an audience or a goal and that they need to see the experience as well.
Right.
So basically incorporating this into leadership, there's a vision, a mission, and goals, and those need to be outward facing as well as inward facing. So as a leader, if my group doesn't know the goal, the mission statement, any of that, then they're not going to be able to perform the way that they should be performing.
Absolutely. Yeah. So like when I work with kids and direct shows, one of the big things I have them do is do their character profile, and knowing what the person is thinking and feeling and their backstory does a lot to put forth what the image that they want to put forth for the audience. So there is the like, okay, what does this person like look and act like on the surface, but causing people to think about why helps that become clearer. So I think that kind of connects to it in the how do we think about why this is what we're putting forward and making that picture clear? But instead of it just being a picture for the sake of being a picture, why do you do it? So one of the acting rules that when you are acting in something or when you're teaching acting is that every stage direction has a reason. So if you're just in a musical number and the director told you to cross the stage, what's your reason for crossing the stage? Like, it's not because I'm supposed to cross the stage. It's, I saw something over there, and I'm excited about that. So you have some kind of reason for everything you do. And I think, does that kind of connect to what you're saying?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly what I'm saying.
So it goes with that. So staging, connection, reason behind what you're doing.
Right. And then finally, they called this one stay in the scene.
Mm.
So basically, when you're in an improv game, anything can happen.
Yeah.
So you need to actively be focused on the scene and what is essential in order to succeed with your team.
Right.
And the same thing happens in business or in education or in music or in science. Like, things happen that you're not expecting. If you're not in the scene with your group, then you're going to miss something. And that's when the whole group suffers.
Definitely. yeah, staying present, staying focused. And that kind of goes back to the yes and. You mm-hmm. have to take everything that happens and build on it. So mm-hmm. if you miss something and you're just in a totally different direction because you didn't see that, that's kind of like saying, no, that didn't happen, which breaks the flow of everything.
Mm-hmm. So the book resources, just because my colleagues were so nice to give them to me, I'll pass them on to you that they mentioned. And I apologize if any of you know these people. And Chelsea, if you know their names and you know I'm pronouncing wrong, let me know.
Okay.
But they mentioned Theater of the Oppressed by Augusto Boal,
mm-hmm.
Spelled B-O-A-L.
I think that's right.
Games for Actors and Non-Actors, second edition by the same person. And then Theater for Community Conflict and Dialogue, The Hope is Vital Training Manual by Michael Rode, R-O-H-D.
Cool. All right. Mm-hmm. So, theater books.
Okay.
I have what have you got? Improvisation for the Theater by Viola Spolin. This book I like. This has a ton of those acting games, and it has notes on, like, side coaching and what is it helping you do.
Mm.
So, like, focusing on, like, things like how did you feel in that space, or focusing on what did you notice about your partner. Sometimes these games are just as simple as pay attention to every detail about somebody and turn around and they're going to change a tiny thing. Mm-hmm. And see what you notice. So just being present. There's tons of these games. Some are for your whole body. Some are for just your mind. Some are for big groups of people. Some you can do by yourself. Mm-hmm. So this is another book that I like, Improvisation for the Theater. I also have 112 Acting Games by Gavin Levy. And this is theater games, again, for developing acting skills, but also for developing skills about being present. So, like, chapter 2 is all on body awareness, on being aware of, like, your presence and how you're acting in it.
Cool.
And, you know, there's tons of them. There's sensory awareness. Are you aware of what's going on around you? Paying close attention, listening. So this is another great book. Some of them are, like, you talk in gibberish and you have to pick up what they're saying. So lots of cool stuff. So those are two improv books. I have more acting books. Some of them are monologue books. And there's also, this one is actually really good. It's more about how to audition, but it has a lot of the same kind of concepts of things you should pay attention to and mm-hmm. how to be present. It's called Audition by Michael Shurtleff, Introduction by Bob Fosse.
Mm.
And this is a really good one. It has you kind of focus on what to embrace in terms of developing a character and developing presence, staying aware, staying focused, and working collaboratively as an ensemble. And a lot of times people can throw different things at you in these kinds of situations for auditions, and it kind of gives you ideas for that. But it's not just for auditions, because these activities can kind of make you more present in the business world. So I love Theater Connections. So here's some more books.
Not only more present, I feel like they also make you think more about others and yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this goes back to relationships. Because well, if empathy, you're an actor yeah. who's solely selfish on the stage, then you're not being a good actor.
Absolutely.
And the same thing goes for a leader. If you're a leader and you're just focusing solely on yourself and your needs and what you want to get done and not looking at the rest of your ensemble, then you're not leading correctly.
Absolutely. So, yeah, some fun improv activities and acting games. But again, I mean, I feel like I would credit theater as being one of the things that, like, really helped me develop into the adult that I became. I think it's one of the really important things. But being able to do that, develop into the adult that I became by using some of these skills, I think it did help me become more present and more aware and more empathetic. And those are skills that are important for a leader.
Mm-hmm. Kind of to slightly segue, I'm not sure if all of you are theater people or music people, but if you're not, another great venue in which to view good leaders in is, I feel, sports.
Definitely.
And I'm not just talking about the captain of the team or even the coach, but I'm talking about, you know, the ability to lead even as an individual player in a baseball game, for example. Like, if and two outfielders are going for the same pop fly and they don't talk to one another and let each other know which one of them has it, mm-hmm. then either they're going to run into one another and get hurt, or they're just going to not pay attention to what's going on and let the ball drop.
Right.
So these leadership skills can go just between two people, leadership between a group. It can be, so it really just permeates every part of our existence.
It definitely does. Yeah. I think that for people to think about it in terms of a sporting event makes a lot of sense, because the very nature of most sports, not all sports, they're individual sports, but most sports is that it's a team effort. So because it's a team effort, it can't be all about you. You might be the star mm-hmm. player, but if you are not in the best position to take a shot, your job is to get that ball to the person who is in the best position to take a shot. Mm-hmm. It's not, let me take all the points for myself and screw it up for the whole team. It's how right. can I best support the group effort? And I think that using sports as an analogy and using theater as an analogy are two really good ways to help us see leadership.
I think that's so true, Chelsea, especially when you think about, I mean, some of my favorite players in multiple sports are the players that are the ones that have the most assists.
Yeah.
Or are the ones that have RBIs or sacrifice flies, knowing that, you know, they're that good that they can see how the game is going to go based on their play. They can get X, Y, and Z, or like let their other players shine. And that goes back to the improv thing, setting others up for success. Mm-hmm. I think that's so important.
And I also think all of this ties back into empathy. The more mm-hmm. that you can understand and identify with other people and understand the common goal of all these people and step outside your own perspective, the better leader you can be.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Empathy is a good one. Yeah, definitely all need mm-hmm. empathy. Sometimes there's just not enough in this world.
I also sadly wholeheartedly agree with that too.
But, you know, it's good to kind of humble yourself and step outside of your own perspective and know that you always have more to learn and know that there are people who know more or have different strengths, and how to leverage all of those people's strengths, I think, is super important as a leader and as a person.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my little take on that.
I like it.
So in order to wrap up, you know, we talked a lot about how leadership is about knowing when other people have strengths that you don't and how to leverage other people's strengths. So let's take a look at this from the other perspective. What are our weaknesses as leaders, and what do we want to do to help boost up those weaknesses, aside from giving it to somebody else, which is another part of being a leader? But how can we, right. within ourselves, become better leaders?
So mine is a scenario-based weakness,
okay.
that I'm sure all of us have been in at one point or another, especially with not just in the workplace, but maybe with romantic partners or friends or family members. So I like to think of myself, and people have described me as, a good listener.
Mm-hmm.
That said, when it comes to someone telling me about something that is bothering them or something in their life that isn't going their way, I listen, but I feel too often I jump into how to fix it, yeah. when that may not necessarily be what they need or how they want to be treated.
Right.
Because how I want to be treated is I want someone to give me advice on how I can best fix it so then I can take action. But sometimes the person speaking with me does not want that. So something that I'm actively working on is, in scenarios such as that, making sure that I'm listening to the whole thing in its entirety and then asking the person what they need from me before I go into fix it mode, because I am a natural fixer.
Mm-hmm.
I want people to be happy and safe and feel fulfilled. So that's something that I just naturally do.
Cool. And you definitely have been working on that, and you are definitely better at that.
Thank you.
I've noticed that.
Thank you.
Awesome. All right. So for mine, I mean, other than, which I think is something that most people have as a weakness, other than the occasional imposter syndrome where, okay, do I have to supervise someone who is like 20 years older than me, and are they going to think I'm a kid kind of thing?
Mm-hmm.
aside from that, I guess I would feel like my weakness as a leader, it's those moments when I have to step up and make a decision in those emergency situations where I have to like make a hard and fast decision myself.
Right.
I'm more, let me organize the people and get them focused than I am like, here's what we're doing in a crisis. You're much better at that than I am, which is why we're a good team. If there's a crisis, I'll be like, okay, let me get everything set up so it's going to be okay. And you're making the decisions. I guess one of my weaknesses that I would like to work on is being more sure of myself when I have to make those solid decisions instantly on my own and trust myself. Because I think, not that it's a bad thing, but one of the reasons that I became such a democratic leadership style is because I feel more secure in what I'm doing when I hear other people's opinions and I can put them all together. So if I'm just talking and I have no feedback on what anybody thinks about it, I will second guess myself. But mm-hmm. if I hear, what is your opinion? What is your strength? How can you see this problem working out? And I assimilate all of that information, I feel more confident in making an overall decision. But in those snap judgments where I just have to rely only on myself, mm-hmm. I think maybe that's an area that I need to work on, which kind of goes with the imposter syndrome thing. Feeling strong enough in yourself to be a leader.
And I'd like to say that since I've known you, your confidence in your ability to make those choices has definitely grown.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Definitely been working on it and, you know, building confidence in myself and as a person, assuredness and self-esteem. It's been a long journey with that. And I definitely feel like, you know, at the age of 30, almost 31,
Almost 31.
We're both almost 31. I'm much better at that than I was, substantially better than that than I was at 10 years ago. I mean, at 20, mm-hmm. I was not at all secure with myself. Definitely better than that, but I would like to think it's continuing to get stronger. But mm-hmm. at the same time, keeping that piece of empathy and let me relate to everybody else first. And that'll always be my go-to. Right. Like, if there's a group of people, I'll want to make sure, like, everybody's okay and mm-hmm. everybody has what they need. But those, right. like, tough in a crisis things, see, we're a good team because you're better at that.
We are a good team.
We are. We could survive in all the crises. Crises.
Because we know when the other person has to be the leader.
Mm-hmm. So, like, if we were both together, my weakness would be, like, when I'm, like, I would just throw it to you, which is another important leadership style, right. knowing when you have to default to somebody else. But in that situation where it's like, it's on you, that's where sometimes I freeze.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the same thing, like you would know when to, you're in your weakness that you said, that would probably be something that you would throw to me. Like,
right.
Okay. I don't want to answer this right away as a thing, how do you want to relate to it first? Like, maybe you talk mm-hmm. to this person first. Like, if we were tag right. teaming being the leader.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
So, but it's good to know other people's strengths that are your weaknesses as part of leadership. So, yeah, I would say that's definitely mine, the self-assuredness. And when I have to make that quick decision and trust myself.
So, we have given you some great ideas about how to develop as leaders and how to recognize leadership qualities in yourself, even if you do have that imposter syndrome. And we've given you some cool theater and improv and sports and everything, resources that you can go back and look at. And again, check out Ty Bennett and his podcast, because if you are listening to us, you obviously like podcasts, and why yeah. not add another one to your daily commute, or
you can never have too many podcasts.
Want to relax.
Yeah.
So
sometimes when you're cleaning, yes, I like podcasts when I'm cleaning, because you can just, like, put your phone in your pocket and it comes around the house with you. So, like, you can't really put the TV on, because if you walk into another room, you're missing it.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, you can listen to something and you can be looking anywhere, cleaning. I like it for that. Or cooking.
I've been long distance running with podcasts because I can, you know, download them and I don't need Wi-Fi or data to listen to them. Mm-hmm. And they also make my brain forget about the fact that I'm long distance running.
Yeah. So when you need a distraction or when you're in annoying traffic, something like that. All right. Exactly. So thank you guys for listening for a year.
I know.
Next podcast is 1 year.
We're going to have to do something really cool.
We will. Stay tuned.
For all these fine people.
Stay tuned for 1 year.
Yes.
Yeah. So super excited for that. And then going into year two strong, if you guys have any ideas of things that you would like to hear us talk about or things that you disagree with that we've talked about, anything you want to share with us to help make year two even better, let us know. And
remember, that we hope to be good leaders. So good leaders listen to the suggestions of others. We know we're lifelong learners.
Yay.
So
it always comes back to lifelong learner. Every podcast.
I feel like that is something that I just like always bring around. I'm like lifelong learner, triple L. But thank you all as always. And we enjoy talking to you. We enjoy communicating with you via this venue. And don't have imposter syndrome. If you have something to say to us, let us know.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. All right. Have a great week.
Have a great week, everybody.
Thanks for tuning into our leadership episode of the Sapio Files. And make sure you check back with us for the next episode for our 1 year anniversary. Exciting. If you would like to reach us, suggest a topic, comment, tell us about you, you can reach us at sapiofilespodcast@gmail.com, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, or YouTube, on the iTunes Store, or on any app that you use to listen to this podcast. Have a fantastic week. Happy spring. And always, stay curious.